everybody, and welcome to FNS Wrestling Podcast, a bonus episode. I am your host, and with me, as always, my teenage son, Jackson. Say hello, Jack.
Eh.
We finally found some time to sit down and review a pay-per-view offering from Impact Wrestling, one of their biggest ones of the year, I would suggest, I guess,
probably.
Right?
I think this is only the second Rebellion pay-per-view.
Yeah, so it is Impact Wrestling's Rebellion from Sunday. Much hyped main event, right?
No, it might be third, actually.
I don't know.
Sorry. Yeah.
Very hyped main event, at least on Impact.
What's the main event?
Are you being sarcastic again?
No.
Yeah. Oh, because Impact had it. They told us eight times?
Like.
Well, I was going to say, it's much hype depending what you watch. Like, if all you watch is AEW, they don't even mention it, really.
They would mention, like, oh, he's going to be the next Impact World Champion. Then, like, to the AEW viewer, like you said, they'd be like, what?
Then you watch Impact, and it's like eight segments, I think, when I reviewed Impact this week.
And referring sometimes to multiple back-to-back.
But, so you were also party of this draw for you was Mauro Ranallo, because you're a big fan of him.
That was, like, the only draw.
Yeah, really. So we're going to talk about this. You watched the first few and the last two. You missed a couple in the middle somewhere, right?
I think I missed tag title.
Right.
And tag title.
Nice.
No, yes, but I saw the result, I think, tag title or something.
Yeah, so you saw the vast majority. You thought you joined me saves me from doing another solo mission. I already did one this week. Much prefer you sitting there and contributing whatever you remember from watching it.
I remember Mauro Ranallo being there and me being like, yeah.
Yeah, it was nice to hear him for sure. I thought we might even switch it up and I thought talk about the main event first and then go back through everything else. Just because, I mean, that's probably what people want to hear, right?
And all right, I gotta scroll to the bottom then.
So scroll down to the bottom of my notes there just sent through space to you immediately. Pretty crazy.
Yeah,
so the main event of this, and by far the most hyped match for Impact
match that anyone would care about,
is Rich Swann representing Impact with the Impact and the TNA championship, right, that he won from Moose that ceased to exist for a while, and then they...
Right, that he just has the TNA belt now, but I guess they're qualifying as the unified Impact world title.
It almost feels like they reinstated it to be able to load Kenny Omega up, like,
right,
if they had
that's
planned
what I'm
this
saying.
Far
like,
in advance.
Well, something that they reinstated is that, like, they're making it, like, visible again, just so that, like, he's a triple world champion, but he's got four belts.
Right. It does look cool, I must say.
Right. And then it's weird.
Or it will look cool if he wins, I mean, people.
Right. And on AEW, he didn't have the mega... I hope he has the AAA title, so then he can actually be, like...
Just all of them?
Flaunt the triple world title.
He'll need
Callis
to carry
thing.
One for him.
Right. Probably the TNA title, because that's just, like, the extra belt.
Barely exists.
Right. No, but it's, like, it's part of the Unified Impact World title, but, like, if you were going... If you had to choose one of the two
100%.
Belts... To pull them, would you pull the actual Impact title, the one that got lumped in because they needed to get rid of it to give it to
Omega?
Well,
neither. I would demand Jeff Hardy's belt that he designed because it's the ugliest belt I've ever seen, so I have to have it.
No, I would demand that they give me the Divas title, and then they do what they did with the GFW title, and they just slap an Impact sticker
also
on it.
Also a gross
they
title.
Just slap an... You know
right.
how they slap the
yeah,
Impact
they
Wrestling
did.
Sticker?
They did.
Should just do that with the Divas
Their
title.
Their championship belt
and hand that to Omega.
Had a sticker on it.
Yeah, literally. Yep. And then... Because I think it was Aries won it from Eli Drake, right? And then they slapped the sticker on it when he won it. And then
he was
given the blue version of what the title is now. Because, remember for a while it was, like, blue. Like, when we were watching and we were there.
Right.
All the titles had basically the exact same designs they have now. They just had blue design instead of red. Which I honestly kind of like better. I don't know why.
Yeah,
I mean, it kind of depends on the style. I think the X Division title looked better, at least, in the world title, but...
Well,
anyways,
let's talk about that world title. So it is Rich Swann versus Kenny Omega for the Impact, TNA, and AEW championships.
The unified Impact title and the AEW title? Okay.
A very hyped match, a match that's probably drawing some new eyes to the product, so they're really hoping to deliver here. So anyways, Don Callis, who comes with Omega, takes the mic from the ring announcer and does his own introduction of Omega in his over-the-top
way. They should have brought in Justin Roberts for Omega's entrance.
I
would like to say how much... Omega's entrance looks worse here because it's just like such a small scale. Even the audio sounds a little worse and no pyro or anything.
That is one other reason I'm glad you're here is because I watch Impact all the time, right? So this is somebody who doesn't watch it at all to watch the pay-per-view to get your thoughts.
It's even more so like if it's Rich Swann I'm used to because this is where he is. But Omega's like he gets weekly pyro, and, like, he comes there's through actually a light there. Up tunnel. Yeah, there's actually people there. He's, like, he gets that epic prelude bit and whatnot.
It does seem...
right? Like, it's just better presentation, I think.
Yeah.
I think Impact just, like, need a new spot, at least, maybe, like, and their set design is the same even for pay-per-views, like, even NXT, right?
There's,
like,
probably budgetary issues there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, probably, but, and, like, there NXT are. Is probably not a... apt comparison. It
Tony
might be, but...
Tony Khan's got deep pockets, man.
Right, and then in NXT, even like the there's small variations in the set, and then also the ramp goes to the ring. See, like, I don't know, some sort of variation.
AEW's got the perfect match. They've got a guy with deep pockets that loves wrestling, so that's right. A really good sign
and
for them.
And WWE's got an old man with deep pockets who money.
Doesn't understand wrestling,
I don't think, and likes money.
Anyways, so this match starts out with holds and counters. We get a shoulder tackle and sort of a mocking stomp by Omega. It's just, he's super arrogant and cocky and probably trying to get over the fact that maybe Rich Swann isn't quite in his league, which I think is actually fair to say,
no,
to be honest.
No, I think that's probably a very fair thing to say.
We get a slap by Kenny, and then he escapes to the ropes as Rich Swann was trying to fight back. Kenny's kind of just ducking out of the way to be sneaky. Swan then flips to avoid some moves, hits a pair of drop kicks and a Phoenix splash, kind of, to the floor.
It was like a Phoenix senton kind of dive deal.
Yeah, I think commentary called it a modified Phoenix splash, but
I would just call that a Phoenix senton.
It was it was different. Dive. And he landed on his feet, right, on that one, if I remember correctly,
he did,
which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So Swan is in control then until Kenny gets his knees up on a splash attempt. We get a belly to back in the ring and then one on the apron by Omega. Swan, I thought this looked real on the, he kind of does a handspring on the ring apron and his neck, you can see it sort of buckle a little
bit.
I
thought it looked like he got his
arms going. Were definitely helping, but it looked like he came from a little
he jumped
higher
too
than
high,
he yes
right,
and
yeah.
he the impact, his arms couldn't take all the impact.
I can't really tell if it looked real or fake because it looked odd.
Yeah, it definitely didn't look like it was supposed to happen, but anyways,
right. Regardless,
Omega then hits a buckle bomb and a brainbuster on his knee for two, which leads me to leave it.
The patella drop brainbuster?
It was planned because I don't know if Omega would immediately attack his neck if it was legit, right?
Maybe it's because like he did target the neck throughout the match, so it's
he
like
did.
Just maybe to get that, maybe a better reason
yep,
for it,
I
think
so too, right?
Know.
Or he's just
looking,
that...
in hindsight now, it does seem like as if it was planned, right?
But Omega's also good enough to see that and go... quickly find out if Swan is okay, right? And then
yeah,
be like,
that's that's true.
I'm using that for the rest
that's
of this match.
True. That's also a possibility.
So either way, I'm not sure. Anyways, Kenny works on Swan's neck, as we're saying here, with various sort of basic offense at this point. A pendulum backbreaker by Omega. Some more methodical neck and back work. He's sort of upper back and neck focused at this point in the match. Right. We get a counter to the Kitaro Crusher and a step over kick and a leaping splash by Swan for two. The counter, I think I remember, I don't remember it exactly, but I remember liking it at that point.
I also don't remember.
we waited too long to record, by about a day for my memory. Frankensteiner by Swan for a one count. They're both up top, and this is the first of a couple pretty awkward botches, right? Like, I'm just not sure what they were going.
I don't even remember. I remember some, I don't remember either exactly.
They just sort of,
yeah,
someone didn't commit to something, and they just kind of fell from the ropes to the... the mat.
Yeah.
Then we get a Swan quickly climbs up, I guess, to recover and hits a frog splash here for a two count. We get a big kick and a doctor bomb by Omega for two. V triggers, which I thought all the V triggers in this match looked pretty awesome. I mean, they always do, but they were one of the things that sort of picked this up for me.
Swan is good at selling. So.
He is. Swan escapes the one winged angel here. Heel kick by Omega, another V trigger. They're both up in the opposite corner this time, and they fall again. And I'm, like, putting, like, two question marks after this, because it's hard to believe that this is happening again.
Right, it is quite odd.
Swan tries a cover and gets a two count here off an awkward fall from
which
the ropes.
I find it's interesting early in the notes. You said a Frankenstein for one, but an odd thing gets a two count.
A nothing, really. I feel like they... Swan almost thought he saved this one and wasn't sure. Maybe it looked okay, but it did not.
No.
High knee and a... awesome snapdragon after a strike exchange. Another snapdragon right after that. Swan counters into a cutter at one point. The ref then takes a handspring cutter as Omega pulls him in front.
I knew there was going to be a ref bump because they brought in two refs.
Yes.
I just thought that Aubrey Edwards would take over.
It was getting
just,
involved at some point.
I knew this was going to happen.
You were right. A big clothesline by Omega, and the new ref is in. Omega grabs a chair. This was a weird spot too. Do you remember this? Because Aubrey's like standing behind him and he's literally holding the chair for seconds.
She's waiting for him to...
Like, what if he didn't take a swing path that was exactly into her hands? You know what I mean? What if he, threw it at him or kicked it out?
Would she have to like dive and be like, no? So
I thought that was a bit strange.
Yeah, she was standing there for a good like at least 10 seconds.
And she was just mugging for the camera and just like, oh no, that you're not going to get it. I guess the point is that even though she's the AEW official, she's not letting him get,
I guess. Yeah, I think they could have done a better way to get the point across.
It was a bit awkward. Callis is then up on the apron. Swan hits a handspring cutter for a near fall. Michinoku driver by Swan for two. V-trigger, electric chair, German before a J-driller.
Tiger driver.
Which I love, but Swan kicks out. V-trigger, and again, Swan collapses to sort of avoid a third one, which I thought was pretty cool. Like, he just drops to the mat to avoid a third one.
A good visual.
But there is one more V-trigger right in front of Mac. And who else was that?
Eddie.
Oh, thank you, Eddie.
It says Maddie.
I know. That's why I was like, who is that? Swan tries to fight back but takes a high knee. And then we get just sort of what I put as a desperation suplex by Swan. Like, he's basically got no energy left at this point. A missed Phoenix splash. Another V-trigger and the one-winged angel for the win. And Omega wins everything, all the gold belts, in about a 23-minute match. What did you think before I talk?
I liked it. Like, I think I would have liked a better match, probably.
It's fair about everything. Sure,
but I think that's kind of Impact Wrestling right now for you.
Yeah.
Just based on what I hear every week.
Yes.
So I liked it, but the botches really took away from me. I think
it was weird.
The bit with Aubrey Edwards is a little weird, because it's like, she's like standing there like, come on, come on.
Yeah.
And I think Swan's not bad, but I don't think he's Omega either.
I agree. I don't think he's on that level.
But it was good, and the outcome was the most predictable thing I've ever seen.
Also true, right? We knew there's basically, I didn't hear anyone think that Swan was going to win this. I thought it was a good match as well, not amazing. Omega constantly finding ways to attack Swan's neck. I feel bad because I basically really like everything Omega was doing here, pretty much. I mean, I don't know who to blame for the botches. Maybe it's Kenny, but like, his offense looks sick. The snapdragons, the V-triggers.
Right, and that's just Omega in general.
And for me to say the V-triggers look awesome when there's like five or six in a match, normally a lot of moves I'd be like, enough, but they always look crazy, right?
Right. Like, I even said, like, I was talking with my friend. He says he doesn't like Omega usually, and like, the V-triggers are too much, but I think they just look
they're
so good.
So crisp every time. I don't even really care against everybody.
Right.
So I liked him constantly attacking the neck after that spot on the apron that was either really believable or real. I don't know which. Either way, it doesn't matter. Swan's thing, I guess, was that he took a ton of punishment, right? And never gave in. The match was good. The V-triggers looked awesome. I like that the match didn't have a ton of interference, right? And that the finish was basically clean. Like, sure, there was the odd shenanigans or attempted thing, but nothing.
Right, but I think that's what needed to be done here, because, like, Omega's, like, saying, like, oh, I'm going to win, I'm going to... So, like, I feel like it just works better if he wins clean here.
I think so, too. And Swan looks fine in defeat, right? Like, he put up a good fight here.
I think no one would have been disappointed if he had lost, because, like, I think everyone with the brain knew.
Right, I would agree. I would hope so. But yeah, I think this is a strong main event for Impact, but it's not what they hoped for, right? They were hyping this a lot. Again, if all you did was watch AEW and then walk into this, you may have even enjoyed it more, because it wasn't hyped really at all.
Right, it's almost like when WWE billed Edge and Orton as the greatest wrestling match ever. It's just like, you're almost setting them up for failure. And they didn't call it that here, but like, they're basically setting up as like, it should be.
Yeah, it was a good match, maybe very good even, but not to the level I was hoping for sure.
Yeah, I would have to agree.
All right, so now I got to scroll back up to the top of this impressive document, because we're going to go back to the beginning. I just thought we'd get the main event out of the way, you know, just to switch it up a little bit.
Right.
The opener was another match that I was excited to see, and I think you were interested in it, right? Like, I really like Ace Austin, Josh Alexander.
The next division usually.
Yeah, it is.
Good.
So they started out, I think, a smart decision with the X Division Championship match between TJP, Josh Alexander, and Ace Austin defending. So these guys have been sort of in each other's orbits for quite a while in different combinations and for different reasons. Always really good matches come out of this, so I was pretty excited for this match. and a really good choice for an opener. So Ace Austin early on hits a Fosbury flop onto both challengers. He's just really graceful, right? Like, stuff he does, he just looks like he lingers in the air a little bit longer than most people right. do for some reason.
Yeah, look good.
Yeah, sorry, my notes just completely shut off, so I'm coming back. There we go. Then we get a nice superplex avalanche Russian leg sweep. Remember that? I thought that was awesome by Alexander. I don't think I've ever seen it before.
I do remember. Yeah, I was like, I thought it'd be a Tower Doom, and then it was kind of that.
Right, that's what they were kind of setting up, like, oh boy, here we go with the cooperation, and then nope, it's a avalanche Russian leg sweep superplex.
Right, yeah, it was pretty cool.
It was. A little bit later, TJP lands a top rope splash to Austin, but Alexander breaks up the pin and puts Austin in an ankle lock. TJP applies a knee bar to Alexander, who then applies an ankle lock to Austin. So you've got sort of this chain of submissions going on between the three. And that's one thing.
It's a TJP match, so expect it.
Always. And one thing in this match,
at least it wasn't, a double submission by TJP.
I don't think there was.
No, I think there was going to be one, I thought, but there wasn't that.
But I was going to say here that for a triple threat, there was not a lot of, like, one guy's
out. It's your turn. It's,
yeah, right. This involved all three, right?
I mean, it was a pretty short match, so I don't think there was necessarily room to I know what you mean.
Sometimes triple threats fall into that, where it's a two wrestle while one guy waits, you know?
Sorry. Most of the time, WWE triple threats end up that way.
Yeah, I still like them to some
yeah,
point.
Yeah, no, like, the WrestleMania one was good.
So Austin does hit the fold on Alexander, but TJP breaks up the pinfall. A little bit later, Alexander avoids another fold attempt, hits his J-driller, and looks like he has the pin here, but it's broken up at the last second. Austin places Alexander
on
the top.
Wasn't there like a double fold at some point? Or was it that fold?
Alexander and TJP were engaged in something, and he came and sort of went over TJP and hit the fold on...
I remember being a double.
Oh, it was on both? You could be right.
He pinned Alexander at least.
So up top and then attempted Hurricane Rana, but Alexander catches him with an ankle lock instead. TJP hits another top rope splash, has the pinfall, but Fulton
pulls... I think it was Mamba Splash, probably.
It is probably the Mamba Splash. Fulton pulls TJP out of the ring to stop the count. Alexander then hit another double underhook pile driver, the J-driller, which looks awesome, I think, especially when he does it, on Ace Austin and pins him to become the new X Division champion in just over 11 minutes.
Jeez, you're obsessed with the time now.
I am obsessed with the times.
I fully
admit it.
I remember. This is the same amount of time as their TV main event.
And you say I'm obsessed with the time.
No, I just remember
that. I know, you just remember things. What did you think of this?
I liked it. They did good for the time. The guy, I would have liked more time. Because, like, an 11-minute match on a pay-per-view, especially when it's a title match.
Everything's a little bit quicker.
And it's more
here
than two people. Yeah. But I liked it. Good outcome. I mean, it wasn't TJP, so I'm fine.
I'm pretty much the same.
And I liked it. The J-Jeller looks pretty sweet.
And so then, I thought this was a really fun match. These guys would be hard pressed to have a bad match, I think. I'm thrilled Alexander won. Despite not predicting it, I didn't think he was going to win.
Oh, no, I think we both went Ace Austin. Actually,
I think so, too.
Pull that up.
Yeah, pull that up. It was a fun match. There were no lulls of some really cool offense pretty much by everybody. I thought it was a fun start.
Mm-hmm.
And then, what was the Alexander tweet? Remember, I got a bit excited because I'd completely forgotten about it.
Oh, option C something, right?
So, Possibly. Because I've been saying I want Alexander in the main event picture, I think he's a perfect Impact champion, to be honest. So option C, I think you were right because you said it was Austin Aries, right? Because I couldn't remember and
I know,
actually watched
it. And
then
Chris Sabin also did it at least against Bully.
I think Aries
started
it.
He's the first person I know of that did it, so I think so.
So yeah, option C became that you could trade in your
X Division title for a world title shot.
Right.
I think Eddie Edwards also did it.
And then that would free up the X Division title.
Although I think...
Usually leads to an Ultimate X or whatever it's called match.
Which would be nice.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Although they have a pretty small place. Although I don't think they should do it yet.
It's a good division they've got going right now. So, yeah, I'm very happy with this. And maybe option C even being mentioned was kind of cool because I'd forgotten all about it.
So we both went with Austin, so we're both wrong, but we've also got...
We both took Omega.
Right.
So we're good there.
Who wouldn't?
The commentary team then run down the card for tonight's show before telling us that Eric Young, as you had said on our show on Saturday, they do have a replacement for him. What excitement, right? Because I'm always like... I always expect or hope for the best, obviously, and then I get disappointed a lot. But this one was actually kind of cool. So, Violent by Design or backstage, Eric Young's speaking to someone off camera about being his replacement in the match due to his ACL injury. While Diener, Doring, and Rhino are sort of standing by, the replacement wrestler wasn't shown here. And then we sort of get a video package just hyping up this and reminding of us of all the stuff that's gone on in this 8-man tag match, which was fine. The video packages, they do a pretty good job. And I guess it's kind of important on this show because they're expecting people are watching that probably aren't watching Impact
right,
weekly.
Omega, he brings in all the people, which I think he's, which is why I think, which I don't think you've agreed that much, but I think he should have like a decent run with the title because one, he's good. I think he'll give them good matches. Two, I think this belt collector gimmick's awesome. And three, he's a draw, right? So he's going to bring in people.
If he can keep making it to TV tapings, then yes.
Right,
that's okay.
Which he's done a good job of, I will say.
I just don't want an absentee champion that doesn't even belong to that company. I don't think Impact does either.
Don't worry, it's not Brock Lesnar.
That's true. So Burn. We then get, what was an 8-man tag match? Violent by Design versus...
Yeah, it was.
James Storm, Chris Sabin, Willie Mack, and Eddie Edwards.
Can I see who it was?
Sure. So the new addition.
It was Debbie Morrissey, who is.
Who I was like, I don't know who that is.
Big
and then,
Cass.
And he is bigger and more ripped than ever.
He's watched his interview with Chris Van Vliet. Which it was really cool because it's basically like he talks a lot about how he had some issues, right?
He did have some issues. Yeah, he had some issues with alcohol.
To the point where it was like life or death or whatever. But I thought it was a really cool interview. And it was like really recent too. Like I think just before this. So I'm really happy to see him back. I honestly I liked him a bunch when in WWE. The Enzo was cool in their entrance and nothing else. But I liked Cass in general. I was kind of disappointed when he was gone.
And it's great to see that he has things in order because like with the size and abilities of this guy, you know something
right.
must have been going on for WWE.
And he was just wearing
him.
Pants and whatever, but apparently that's funny because you couldn't find a gitch.
But yeah, he looked great. Physically looked in amazing shape. So anyways, it was a surprise, and I thought it was a pretty good one. I was telling you earlier today, it's like perfect for Impact. It can be sort, and it's. I'm not trying to be mean to Impact, but they're basically like. They're
in between the indies
the
and the big
stop
on leagues.
The way to something bigger for some people, right? Like, he needs to prove that everything, he's got his life back together and he's reliable and is still a good performer, and then who knows, right? Mm-hmm. So good for him.
Yeah.
Eric Young then sets up a chair on the ramp to watch this, and it's early on in the match. Morrissey boots Storm off the top rope to the floor. It's weird to say Morrissey still. Later on, Mac has Diener pinned, but Morrissey breaks it up and then awkwardly tags himself into the match. At one point, Sabin superplexed Diener from the ropes onto a bunch.
It's the classic war game spot.
And when they don't do it really quickly, right? Those guys look kind of dumb huddled down there.
Wait,
case.
Wait.
But anyways,
they're coming. Okay.
They're working safe. I get it. In the ring, Mac hits Doring with a stunner, and Doring leaves the ring. Morrissey enters the ring, glares at Mac before blocking a stunner, then hitting a big boot. Morrissey follows up with his East River Crossing finisher, which
I didn't know
what?
He still used it. It's like, so he has something like the position you have him for, like, the
world's
strongest
effect
slam.
Ends up,
right? And he kind of, like, swings him into the, yeah, that general side effect kind of position. I like it.
So he pins Willie Mack and picks up the win for his team in 10 minutes. There's my obsession with the time.
10 minutes for an 8-man tag? Like, again, like...
You're right, but, I mean, think about it. The main event that you've hyped for a month... between Megastars was 23 minutes.
Right.
Is in WWE, that'd be like 36 minutes or something.
At least.
Crazy. What'd you think of this match?
It was fine. It was honestly like pretty short.
It was.
So nothing like super notable, but I'm happy to see Cass. I like him. Yeah, he got a lot for what time they had.
Right.
And there's decent action. So it wasn't bad, but it wasn't like the best.
I didn't really enjoy it. I had trouble focusing. I thought stuff was all over the place.
Yeah, it wasn't.
That babyface team was just kind of thrown together, right? It's just like
Beer Gun, Mac, and Edwards.
Yeah, so just kind of thrown together so that they could have this multi-person match. I had trouble getting into it for some reason. Everybody worked hard, I guess. The match was fine. It was just somewhat of a cluster for me. I didn't know who was legal. I wasn't sure what was going on. And I didn't love that.
I think the purpose was just to get Cass
I think so too
over and just introduced, right? Which I think they did, but then it also was a detriment to the
right because you've
match.
Got this cobbled together kind of nonsensical team is winning and beating an established group that's supposed to be violent and deadly and whatever, right? That didn't look so good here.
Such a violent match.
And that's what I said. I assumed that Kaz, since he was booked so strong, was going to be on Impact for a while, and that has been confirmed.
He is going to be debuting.
He's in the plans, at least for going forward right now, so that's good. Because I thought I didn't think he looked amazing, but he didn't look bad. He didn't miss any spots. You know what I mean? So it's good to see him. We then get a video package recapping the Brian Myers Matt Cardona feud.
Woo!
And basically, Myers feels that Cardona has followed him here to steal Myers' spotlight. Myers wants to get him away from Cardona for once. I kind of am liking this story because it's Myers like, I want to get away from you because you've always stolen the spotlight from me. And so I get here.
If you know Zack Ryder, I think if you know these guys, I think you know Myers is right.
Yeah, and that's, I've been agreeing with Myers basically, right? Like, he gets to Impact. He's changed his character from what he was in WWE. He's just starting to get some traction. And here comes this guy doing his WWE gimmick still. And
already a bigger star than getting him, all the attention, arguably, right?
So this match starts. They're looking like they might shake hands. But again, you get a middle finger from Myers instead.
And who's not wearing the eye patch anymore, just to note.
And if you haven't been listening to our show, I've actually been a pretty big fan of Myers in this heel run, right? Like, I think he's a really good Impact wrestling
heel. I remember you were
really
not thrilled when he came at first.
No, not at first. And then I quite like his work right now.
I remember chuckling when Matt Cardona came out to face Ace Austin, because I know you don't like him.
I'm not a big Cardona
fan. And you
fan.
Do like Austin.
Although I think he's probably a good fit for them too. I just don't care for him.
Yeah.
Anyways, we get a suplex countered into a neck breaker on the floor by Cardona early on. Battle outside with Cardona in control until Myers pulls some sort of employee in front of him, snaps Cardona across the barricade. Myers is in control back in the ring.
Don't ask how, but I poke myself in the eye.
Nice. I was just about to say, Cardona results to an eye gouge to shift the momentum.
That's not cool, man.
Before hitting a missile dropkick, back elbow clotheslines, face buster by Cardona. The reboot avoided by Myers, who slides to the floor.
The FKA the broski boot.
Right. But Cardona hits it through the ropes anyways. That actually
rebooting
looks okay.
What? His WWE gimmick?
Like, I think that's the point.
God damn.
He's rebooting his career by leaving them.
Uh-huh. More like rebooting a dead gimmick.
And he was the internet champion. So it's like a double entendre.
Well, yeah.
I don't know. I'm just making that up. I could be
no,
wrong.
That,
sounds good,
no,
though.
No, that makes sense. And same for Radio Silence.
So Radio Silence on the floor. Speak
FKA
of the devil.
The Rough Rider.
By Cardona. Myers trips Cardona. Momentum.
No,
I don't even
where...
know what I meant there.
Never mind.
Turns the tide by tripping him. Myers hits a spear on the outside. Then a top rope elbow drop back in the ring. We get the Hot Mess, which is, I guess, a shout out to
Chelsea Green. Yeah.
Which is the kill switch slash unprettier.
Slash I'm prettier.
Right. Oh, yeah.
That's what Chelsea Green called
it. I like
it.
That, actually. That was clever. Yeah. For a two count, Myers avoids the Radio Silence. Cardona tweaks his knee on the landing.
And I did hear that he might have gotten injured, so I think this might have been
it. If it wasn't real.
It did look really unnatural.
Yeah, because we backed it up and looked again, and his knee tweaked.
It looked really weird.
Unless he practiced and can do that, which is impressive, it did look like he got hurt there. So the ref stops the action, goes over to check on Cardona, even throws up the X symbol, which who knows now. It used to mean that was legit, but not anymore.
I think it probably, because it did look pretty weird.
He calls for officials. More refs come to check on him. Myers kind of comes over, offers his hand, because these guys have how much history? 10, 15 years of being friends and tag team partners. So you think maybe Myers is just taking a moment to help him up. Helps him up and then hits his roster cut clothesline finisher for the win in just under 10 minutes. What'd you think?
I thought it was fine. I thought it was it was decent.
Yeah.
Which I think we were talking about earlier. I don't
love we don't
to
love
say
saying
that,
that
but
sometimes that
that's
fits.
The only way I could really describe it here. Like, it wasn't bad. It wasn't the best either. I think it was better probably than the 8-man tag. But
for
it was
sure,
good. These guys know each other well, so.
I quite enjoyed this match. I thought this was just, good work by two veterans who know each other really well. And again, I don't know if Cardona was actually hurt. It sounds like he was, you're saying, right? But it did look good.
It looked pretty, like.
And if that was a legit injury, that was a pretty smart shift on the fly, right? Like, we need to get this match over with, but I can take one more move. So that was a cool way to do it, if it was that decision was made.
Right, it's just a clothesline.
Right, so I liked it.
Probably
Cardona.
The one scenario where the roster cut is actually
believable.
Helpful.
Yeah, true. It's
just,
a simple.
Just helpful, right? Like,
it's not like he had to take some sort of running anyways.
Right.
So yeah, I like the finishing spot actually. And I like this simple, straightforward match much more than the multi-man one before it. I actually thought this was a pretty good match.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, Everything's kind of graded standards. On this Impact standards, right? So this was pretty good. We get Gia Miller interviewing Tony Khan from AEW, who is got Jerry Lynn with him, along with Tony Schiavone and Aubrey Edwards, the ref from the main event. Khan says Edwards is there to referee the match as Scott D'Amore shows up with Brian Hebner. D'Amore says he's happy to have everyone there, but that they have the wrestling thing under control. Khan jokes that Brian would never screw anybody. This is like an inside the Hebner's.
Because Hebner was in on the Montreal Screwjob.
Right. And D'Amore suggests that they have two referees in the match. Khan agrees to it.
But Edwards ends up being like outside enforcer.
Pretty much. She's not. She's just kind of the secondary.
Even if you were to argue, oh, she's the backup ref, when the ref was down, she literally checked and got that ref back up instead of taking his place. So I don't even think could be considered the backup ref.
She did do we then get a package summarizing the issues between Fire and Flava and Jordynne Grace, including Jazz. So we get the Knockouts Tag Team Championship match with Fire and Flava versus Jordynne Grace and Rachel Ellering. So Jazz, who just recently retired and was Grace's most recent tag team partner, accompanies them to the ring. And early on, Ellering dominates Tasha, and so Tasha quickly tags in Kiera Hogan. Ellering is working like a powerhouse early.
Yeah, I don't
think
she's the best.
I just thought that was strange because Jordynne Grace is a legit powerhouse. And Ellering was trying to play that role when there's somebody who does it way better right there. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It was a bit strange to me. Jordynne Grace dominates Hogan with a slam and hard Irish whips. The heels double team to gain the advantage on Jordynne Grace. Double super kick, double suplex to Grace by Fire and Flava. The heels isolate Grace in their corner for a really long time. Dominate her with frequent tags, quick moves, including Hogan's running kick where she basically runs the entire ropes and then hits a boot to the face. I actually like it. It's a really big setup for it, but it looks pretty good. Grace avoids a boot that accidentally hits Tasha Steeles instead, and then Grace hits a spinebuster to Hogan. Hot tag to Ellering, who takes down both of the heels. STO and a leg drop off the first rope by Ellering for two. The baby faces double team Kiera Hogan, leading to a senton by Jordynne Grace to Hogan, who is laying across Ellering's knees at this point. Tandem Irish whips, but the heels escape, land stereo missile drop kicks. Grace suplexes both members of Fire and Flava at the same time because she is just super strong. We get a very awkward apron bump for Tasha Steeles here as Grace kind of loses her over the top and Ellering misses her by what it looked like. I think Ellering was supposed to hit some sort of move on the apron, but didn't. And Tasha just ended up hitting the apron and then the floor. Looked like a pretty hard landing. Jordynne Grace dives onto Steeles onto the floor and Hogan goes up top and jumps on the pile. Tasha takes Grace out on the floor with a crucifix. Ellering hits a fisherman's spinebuster to Hogan for the win in just over 9 minutes for a tag team championship on a major pay-per-view. What did you think?
I didn't love this.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think not to be that person, but Ellering's not in the best shape, and I don't think she's that great, if I'm being honest. She was fine here, but she's just not that great.
She didn't look good enough to be winning a major championship on her debut.
Right.
I would say.
I just don't think she's the best. And then I know you like the other people, so
Fire and Flava?
Yeah.
I love Jordynne Grace.
I think they're
too,
at least an established team, so I would say that's probably smarter.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just didn't love this. And also too short to be anything super interesting.
I like the match fine, but I really do not like the outcome at all. I've been a huge fan of Fire and Flava since before they won the tag titles, but since they have, they honestly have been not as interesting.
Worse.
Yeah,
I've noticed that just from the reviews.
Right, I used to get super excited to see them, and they were like the highlight of the show, and I would stop what I was doing to pay attention, and now they haven't been booked that well. It's sort of like they've been stifled somehow. Anyways, character-wise, they're not getting as much time to showcase their character, which is what really won me over. But I thought Ellering looked good at times, but sloppy at a few other times.
Yeah.
And the fact that she was, again, positioned as the powerhouse when she's in with one of the all-time women powerhouses seemed odd. Because to me, Jordynne Grace is way more legit powerhouse.
And also, I think I remember you said Ellering got the hot tag, which I feel like the role should be reversed.
I think so, too, because Jordynne Grace is super fast as well. Her hot tags are awesome. So a newly formed tag team beats the only legit tag team in the company. If I really think about it, I don't think there's any other actual women's tag team, so that kind of annoys me.
And Havok and Nevaeh are gone, right?
So yes, Nevaeh's actually been released, I think Nevaeh's gone.
You could argue Perrazzo and Kimberly or something.
Kimberly and Susan.
I guess.
Maybe, but that's, they don't, like, they're not actively a tag team, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know what the plan for Fire and Flava is. Maybe they split, and I feel like Hogan's going to have a singles run at some point. I just see that coming, I think. I don't want them to. I think there's still plenty of life in Fire and Flava, but the division isn't super strong right now, so who knows? Recap then of Sami Callihan, Trey Miguel story leading to their match at the pay-per-view. Basically, Sami has questioned Trey's passion this whole time. And
that makes Trey mad.
Been sort of messing with him, and Trey gets really mad. And then Sami also wants to sort of mentor him. He thinks he can take him to the next level in his career, and Trey has been resisting that.
You could argue he wants to control Trey's narrative.
Yes, it's led to this Falls Count Anywhere match, which I'm not usually a huge fan of because it's a lot of... I didn't find this one too bad for it, but sometimes
I don't think I saw this.
It's a lot of standing and waiting for a ref to count. You know what I mean? Can get right to that. But anyways, I didn't find that.
Isn't that Last Man Standing, you mean?
I don't know
that's
if you were
when
here.
You wait to count?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry.
Falls Count Anywhere.
Never mind.
No, yeah, I did not see this. I missed this in the knockout tag.
Okay.
In the knockout singles.
So I was been looking forward to this. I just think Sami Callihan's been really good lately. Trey does some exciting stuff. He's not my favorite, but I figured they put on a good match. So we get Trey with a shotgun dropkick and a regular dropkick to start before Sami picks him up, throws him over the ropes to the floor, like just was like, enough of you, and just chucks him over the top rope.
Be gone.
Sliced bread on the floor by Trey using the ring post. Creative Hurricane Rana from the apron to the floor by Trey. Crazy suicide dive by Trey, but Sami moves and he hit the barricade really hard. Trey did. It looked really painful. Sammy's in control, throws Trey over the barricade. Sami gets a production crate that just misses Trey, but he power bombs him on top of
production
it instead.
Crate.
Sami takes a wrench and a chain out of the box. He hits Trey with the chain, stretches Trey's mouth with the wrench. Actually puts the wrench in his mouth and like stretches his cheek back. Sami gets chairs from under the ring and throws them inside. Sami fires a chair into Trey's face and gets out a table now.
Why would you take the liberty of putting chairs in the ring when you don't have to?
I don't know.
It's false count anywhere.
And he could, yeah, that's true. Yeah, or he could just use them right there, I guess, right?
Right.
Back in the ring, Trey's struggling to stand up, so Sami slams his head onto some chairs. Sami misses with the wrench, and Trey hits a scorpion kick and a high impact thing. I think it was the page turner, but you weren't there to confirm for me, so I'm not sure. Onto a stack of chairs to stop Sammy's momentum. After a brief battle, Sami slams Trey. This looked cool. He slams him onto the table legs of a table that's upside down. So upside down, the legs are up, and he gets slammed right on top of the legs. Sami throws another chair into Trey's face. Trey's placed up top. Another chair is thrown into his face. Sami sets up a table now. Jumping backwards pile driver off the ropes by Sami onto the table that doesn't break, unfortunately. And both men are down in the ring. Back outside, Sami sets up another table on the floor. Thumb to the eye by Trey. Crotch claw by Sami. Pile driver to Trey on the apron.
The groin claw, keep it PG or whatever.
On the apron's step area. I think they were trying to say the steps, but I wasn't quite convinced, I think. Sami puts the steps on top of Trey. So now he thinks he's got Trey trapped and the ref has started to count. So maybe it is a last man standing.
Because
the ref's counting as Trey is trapped under the stairs because he can't get up.
Wait, so he's not pinning him?
No.
What?
So
but
he
they
basically,
said it's
you know how this,
anywhere.
You know how this, I think that's my mistake. That's what I'm saying.
No, but I'm pretty sure they said too.
Oh. Anyways, the ref's counting because he's got, you know, the steps are hollow. He's got right. Trey in the steps, but the hollow steps are also backed up against the ring apron. So Trey comes out from under the ring and hits a cutter to Sami through the table and picks up the win here.
Did he pin him?
I can't actually remember.
Let me see if it was false count anywhere.
Anyways, the match was pretty much what I expected. Sami dominated and used a ton of weapons and violence. Trey refuses to die and ends up winning, which is pretty much what I thought. I liked the match. Sami really only took one big move before losing, which I didn't think was great. Like, Trey took 100 moves and was still okay. And Sami basically took one big move through the table and was done. Pretty fun match, though. I assume Trey will continue like his move up the card. Sami will likely move on to make someone else look good. That seems to be what he does most of the time, is just get involved with mid-card people and try and elevate them, I think. Which is fine. Somebody's got to do it, and he's good. I was going to say, what did you think?
I cannot find.
I can't remember if it was a pinfall or not.
I'm almost positive you said, and they said false claim, or like previously.
I believe you. Your memory's better than mine. We then get Gia Miller interviewing the Impact Unified Champion, Rich Swann, in the backstage area. Swann says nothing will stop him from proving he's the best.
I think Kenny Omega will stop him.
I think he might. Everyone talks about how it's the biggest match of his career, but it's also the biggest match of Kenny Omega's career. Disagree?
He's literally faced Okada, like...
I was just going to say.
3 or 4 times. He's faced Jon Moxley, like, a couple times. He literally won an exploding barbed wire death match. Yep.
This wouldn't be in the top 15, I don't think... probably.
Yeah, I don't think...
I'm not trying to be mean.
Yeah, it's Rich Swann and Impact Wrestling, like...
Yep. Swann says they both won championships, but the difference in this match is that once the bell rings, one person will take home all the gold.
Yep.
Swann adds that they aren't in an AEW ring, and it's Impact pay-per-view, and it's his house. He will rebel against them and will bring the fight all night long. We then get a highlight package.
Rebellion's the name of the pay-per-view.
Right? Clever. We then get a highlight package summarizing the issues between Finn Juice and the Good Brothers over the Tag Team Championships. Finn Juice came from Japan, beat the Good Brothers, who never ever lose, and took the titles back to Japan for a little bit. So this is them back in North America defending those titles.
Right, and you're complaining about a away champ from a not different company.
Well, this is just their tag titles, right?
Yes, but so that's their main...
It's not quite as...
That's their main titles of the tag division.
Anyways, Finn Juice are in matching colorful outfits tonight. I thought they actually looked a little bit better. Gallows is now wearing a sort of like a fedora hat and
that just sounds terrible.
Dangly earring. You missed this match too, right?
Yep.
Anderson and Finley start with some holds and reversals. Juice tags in, tandem offense to Anderson to take control. The baby faces classic cut the ring in half, control Anderson, who eventually tags in Gallows. Tandem offense by the champs. They start to work on Gallows' arm. Double face buster to Gallows for 2. Anderson in. The heels control Finley with punches and kicks. Ref is distracted. Gallows boots Finley to the floor. On the floor. Punches, a boot, and a headbutt by Gallows. My sarcastic note is riveting offense here. It's like, basic move, basic move, basic move. Slowly execute.
That's Luke Gallows.
And then, I'm so mean. This basic offense tires out Gallows, so he slaps on a lengthy chin lock now. Gallows has drained the energy out of this match, sort of right in the middle of it. But anyways, leaping uppercut by Finley, he makes the hot tag. Juice with a flurry to both heels, including a senton to Anderson, a leap over the top to Gallows on the floor. Juice in control, hits a running corner clothesline and a cannonball to Anderson for 2. Claymore Russian leg sweep combination by Finn Juice. Backbreaker elbow drop by Finn Juice. Gallows makes the save.
I was wrong. I think I did see the Knockouts match. No, I'm just reading.
Knockouts championship?
Yeah,
you did. You were there for the final 2. I know you were.
Oh, right. Yeah, I was.
Finley shoved off the ropes to the floor and a neckbreaker to Juice Robinson. Suplex neckbreaker combo by the Good Brothers for 2. Magic Killers broken up by Finley. Juice rolls up Gallows in a small package for the win. And Finn Juice retain.
Roll up.
In just over 10 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, wow, 10 minutes.
It felt really short. Gallows brought it to a bit of a standstill in the middle of the match, and I know I'm hard on Gallows and whatever, but he slowed it down, and then he put on a chin lock for a little while, so not a big fan. A decent tag team match, and I'm always happy.
You know you love the chin locks.
I'm always happy to see the Good Brothers lose, so I don't have much to say. It was a decent tag team match.
I'm wondering if that's the only reason you're okay with Finn Juice holding the tag titles, or just that they keep beating the Good Brothers.
Yeah, as long as the Good Brothers aren't happy, I'm happy. Omega isn't available to talk to Gia, so Callis gives an arrogant promo in his place. Talks about...
Callis? Arrogant? No.
No. Talks about how he and Omega set this all up and said that Swann considers the talent in the back his family, and he's going to lose because they won't help him. Swann is an orphan tonight in this match, which I thought was decent. He and Kenny are closer than blood, and tonight he and Omega will execute and leave with both world titles. True. True story. A good promo, this guy's.
Spoiler. Oh,
always
wait,
good.
We already did that.
Then we get a package summarizing the Deonna Purrazzo Tennille Dashwood journey leading up to this title match. So this is heel versus heel here, and I don't know about you.
Which I think is odd.
But I felt that once it got going, Purrazzo was the heel, and Tennille was not. Right?
Which is odd, because Dashwood's character, even on paper, is just so heel.
Yeah, she's the super obnoxious influencer.
Right, it's like, that's just heel, but I guess just... For the circumstance of the match.
So I like Tennille, but
I feel like it's going to go like the angle, because like then it's like Purrazzo is taken out all comers, and then maybe she'll lose to Taylor Wilde.
She could. He is returning, right? Mm-hmm. Dashwood's sort of been underwhelming. I think I like her, but and I like the idea for her character, but it hasn't been connecting.
She was cool on WWE for a little bit.
She was. Her first episode of her whatever show I liked that she just had 2 weeks ago on Impact. Remember? I thought it was quite
all
funny.
All About Me?
Right.
I think her
So I thought
was
that was good. But anyways, Deonna Purrazzo is awesome. I think she is probably the best technical wrestler in the company, women's division, and maybe in most divisions. I think she's awesome. Anyways, holds and counters to start with Dashwood needing a rope break. Neck breaker by Dashwood in the ropes and a roll through for two. Tenille is going for quick wins right away. Sort of just, you don't want to lengthen a match with Purrazzo. She's just too good. So trying to get it over early makes sense. Some sort of backbreaker submission and Purrazzo dumps Tenille in the corner. Purrazzo's in control for a while after this. Running forearm exchange, knee by Purrazzo, clothesline by Dashwood. Both women are down. Tarantula applied by Tenille, followed by a top rope crossbody for two. Two German suplexes by Deonna, but Tenille fights out of a third. Hits a butterfly suplex to Purrazzo in the corner, followed by two of her running corner crossbodies, which I think look pretty cool. Muda lock by Tenille. And Lee and Susan get on the apron. Caleb pulls them down, but gets run into the ring post by Kimber Lee on the outside. Pump kick by Purrazzo. Falling headbutt from the top is missed. And the spotlight kick from Dashwood, which is her finisher, so I got a little bit nervous there. But Kimber Lee breaks up the pinfall. We get a rolling exploder by Purrazzo. Armbar escaped by Dashwood. Kick to seated Dashwood's face. The Queen's Gambit for the three count. And Purrazzo retains. What was the Queen's Gambit again?
I was going
to ask
you.
Oh, it's the neutralizer.
Right, yes, yeah, that's what it was. I remember because I was like, well, wasn't your like Cesaro's thing? I was like, neutralizer. Yeah.
So Lee, Susan, and Deonna beat on Dashwood after the match. Taylor Wilde comes out to make the save with a tornado DDT and a suplex as the heels retreat up the ramp. So this is Taylor Wilde's return, inserting herself right at the top of the women's card, which is fine. There's not much going on in that division right now, unfortunately. What did you think of this? You saw this one.
I thought it was good. I think the heel-heel dynamic did not really help
it's always
do
tough,
this
right?
match any favors, but, I don't know, Peraza's pretty good. Dashwood's not terrible. Like, she's not the best, but she's no Carmella or Billie Kay
no,
or whatever.
I think she's pretty good. This is the best she's looked, I thought.
Yeah, so I liked it. Nothing too great. I feel like I'm saying that a lot, but that's just how I feel.
And I've sort of liked everything a bit more than you, it seems
well,
like.
Well, yeah, I think I'm conditioned to less Impact. So.
It's true. I'm comparing
it's
it to the weekly.
It's like when we watch, it's like, if, like, for me, it's kind of like similar to the main roster pay-per-views. It's like, what if you didn't watch Impact, but you're just watching the pay-per-views? That's, yeah. I feel like it'd be different, right?
So. Yep. So this, yeah, compared to what you're watching on a weekly basis with AEW and even NXT lately has been pretty strong.
Yeah, I also.
I thought this was a really good match. Easily the best Dashwood has looked since she came here. I do think the heel dynamic was a bit strange, and Dashwood, I thought, ended up being the babyface by default, kind of. Purrazzo
or
just,
the less heel.
Purrazzo just continues to have strong matches with everybody all the time, basically, and Dashwood raised her game, I thought, and she was, I thought this was a really good match, and I don't know what you do with Dashwood, if she stays heel, if there's a rematch, what's next, I guess Taylor Wilde's involved now, so we'll have to see where that goes, but
her,
yeah.
Taylor Wilde's attire was really weird.
I thought this was a good match, and then we do get briefly to see a Slammiversary sort of package, and it implying
that... Right, they did
that
the same thing they did last year, because last year, Slammiversary is like perfectly timed. All the no-compete clauses after the Black Wednesday or Black Friday, was it? Or it was Black Wednesday, I think, last year.
Yeah.
And so the same as this year. Now they got some less prospects, but I think better prospects. They got like Andrade,
yeah.
who's been available for a while, but Samoa Joe...
Yeah, that would be awesome.
The Iconics, although I'd like them to go to AEW because I feel like they need them more and it would work better.
That's my new dream. Samoa Joe comes back to Impact and beats Omega to get the belt
not
back.
Not yet.
Well, he can't yet. He has a 90-day no-compete.
Well, yeah, but it's not at Slammiversary either.
So, yeah, they're implying new people are coming. I'm wondering if
maybe Mickey James.
What if Morrissey was supposed to be one of them and they might have had to speed him up, maybe? I don't know.
That's true.
But anyways. And then it... There was just back to the main event, which we already discussed. So let's, my thoughts, I guess. I don't know. Do you want to give it a mark grade based on what you saw?
I don't know.
A couple matches?
I don't know.
You saw, what did you think?
I didn't seem to love it. I don't know. It wasn't necessarily bad, but I didn't love it, so I'll be a little darn. So I'll give it B-, just because, like, it wasn't to my liking, but that doesn't mean it was necessarily bad.
Right. I liked it overall. The X Division match was good. I liked the Knockouts Championship. And the main event was good, right? Like, I can't say it was a bad match.
Right.
Nothing was really bad. I didn't really like the 8-man tag. I did enjoy the Trey Miguel match and Myers Cardona. So pretty much... And we got sort of a surprise debut of a pretty decent talent in wrestling. So that was cool. I didn't really love that match. But for Impact, I thought this was a pretty good show. I would give it a B and almost actually a B+. I thought by Impact standards, a pretty enjoyable show. And I liked most of it, actually. So I was... Nice. It's weird, right? Because overall, I guess it's like kind of pretty underwhelming main event, even though I'm saying it was good. But based on what I was hoping for, right? But then the rest
and
of the stuff...
And just, I think, what we've seen from Omega basically every other time.
Yeah, but then the rest of the card, I thought, delivered pretty well. So that's kind of where it sits at a B, almost a B+. But yeah, I guess that's going to wrap up our review of Impact Wrestling Rebellion from this year. Thanks for joining us. I hope...
And don't forget, we're 2 days away from our main show.
Yep, we'll have episode, what, 41?
42.
42
coming... Oh, wait, no, 41, probably.
40-something coming 41. Up of our flagship show.
Yeah, 41, because we've already been typing on the 41 doc, so I thought in my mind, I almost thought we already did it.
Doesn't matter.
So, 41.
It's 40-something.
My bad. 41.
And so that's where we'll discuss AEW, NXT in depth. We'll talk about the Impact Wrestling TV episode from this week as well, along with some trivia and some other stuff. So feel free to join us if you'd like to contact us, fnswrestling@gmail.com or fns_wrestling_podcast on Instagram, or leave a comment if you are one of the people who watches us, listens to us on YouTube. And thanks so much for any time you've given to spend to listen to us talk about wrestling this week. We really appreciate it. We hope to see you all back here on Saturday, and until then, take care.
Peace.